Chapter 22. The report came in from Mount Tantus during ship's night, and was waiting for him when Pellin arrived on the bridge in the morning. The Draklor had reached Wayland more or less on schedule 6 hours previously, had offloaded its passengers, and had left the system bound for Valrar as per orders. General Covell had refused to take command until local morning. Pellin frowned. Refused to take command? That didn't sound like Covell.
Captain Pellin!
The comm officer called up to him.
Sir, we're getting a holo transmission from Colonel Sealid on Wayland. It's marked urgent.
Put it through to the aft-bridge hologram pod,
Pellin instructed, getting up from his command chair and heading aft.
Signal the Grand Admiral to... Never mind,
he interrupted himself, as through the archway he spotted Thrawn and Rook coming up the steps into the aft bridge. Thrawn saw him too.
What's wrong, Captain?
Urgent message from Wayland, sir,
Pellin said, gesturing toward the hologram pod. The image of an Imperial officer was already waiting, and even in a quarter-sized hollow, Pellin could see the younger man's nervousness.
Probably Sabaoth,
Thrawn predicted darkly. They reached position in front of the hologram pod, and Thrawn nodded to the image.
Colonel Sealid, this is Grand Admiral Thrawn. Report.
Sir,
Sealid said, his parade ground posture stiffening even more.
I regret to inform you, Admiral, of the sudden death of General Covell.
Pellin felt his mouth fall open a couple of centimeters.
How?
He asked.
We don't yet know, sir. He apparently died in his sleep. The medics are still running tests, but so far all they can suggest is that large portions of the General's brain had simply shut down.
Brain tissue does not simply shut down, Colonel, Thrawn said. There has to be a reason for it.
Sealid seemed to wince.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir. I didn't mean it that way.
I know you didn't, Thrawn assured him. What about the rest of the passengers?
The medics are checking them all now. No problem so far. Rather, they're checking all those still within the garrison. General Covell's troops, the company that arrived on the Draklor with him, had already been dispersed outside the mountain when he died.
What? The whole company?
Pellin asked.
What for?
I don't know, sir. General Covell gave the orders. After the big meeting, I mean, before he died.
Perhaps we'd better have the story from the beginning, Colonel.
Thrawn cut him off.
Tell me everything.
Yes, sir.
Sealid visibly pulled himself together.
General Covell and the others were landed via shuttle approximately 6 hours ago. I tried to turn over command of the garrison to him, but he refused. He then insisted on having a private word with his troops in one of the officers' mess halls.
Which troops? Thrawn asked. The whole garrison?
No, sir. Just the ones who'd accompanied him on the Draklor. He said he had some special orders to give them.
Pellin looked at Thrawn.
I'd have thought he'd have had plenty of time aboard the ship for special orders.
Yes, Thrawn agreed. One would think so.
Maybe it was Sabaoth's idea, sir. He was at the General's side for the minute they got off the shuttle, muttering, sort of, the whole time.
Was he now?
Thrawn said thoughtfully. His voice was calm, but there was something beneath it that set a shiver up Pellion's back.
Where is Master Sabaoth now?
Up in the Emperor's old royal chambers. General Covell insisted they be open for him.
Would he be above the Islamari influence up there?
Pellin murmured. Thrawn shook his head.
I doubt it. According to my calculations, the entire mountain and some of the surrounding area should be within the Force empty bubble. What happened then, Colonel?
The General spent about 15 minutes talking to his troops. When he came out, he told me that he'd given them secret orders that had come directly from you, Admiral, and that I wasn't to interfere.
And then they left the mountain?
After stripping one of the supply rooms of field gear and explosives, yes. Actually, they spent a couple of more hours inside the garrison before leaving, familiarizing themselves with the layout, the General said. After they left, Sabaoth escorted the General to his quarters, and then was himself escorted to the Royal Chambers by two of my stormtroopers. I put the rest of the garrison back onto the standard nighttime routine, and that was it. Until this morning, when the orderly found the General.
So Sabaoth wasn't with Covell at the time of his death?
No, sir. No, the medics don't think the General lived very long after Sabaoth left him.
And he was with the General up until that time?
Yes, sir.
Pelion threw Thrawn a sideways look. The Grand Admiral was staring at nothing, his glowing red eyes narrowed to slits.
Tell me, Colonel, what was your impression of General Covell?
Well, I'd have to say I was a bit disappointed, sir.
How so?
He just wasn't what I was expecting, Admiral.
Celid said, sounding distinctly uncomfortable. Pelion didn't blame him. Criticizing one senior officer in front of another was a serious breach of military etiquette, especially between different branches of the service.
He seemed distant, is the word I'd have to use, sir. He implied that my security was poor, and that he would be making some important changes, but he wouldn't talk to me about them. In fact, he hardly spoke to me the whole time he was here. And it wasn't just me. He was short with the other officers who tried to talk to him as well. That was his privilege, of course, and he may have just been tired. But it didn't seem to fit in with what I'd heard of the General's reputation.
No, it doesn't, Thrawn said. Is the hologram pad in the Emperor's old throne room operational, Colonel?
Yes, sir. Though Sabaoth may not be in the throne room itself.
He will be, Thrawn said coldly. Connect me with him.
Yes, sir.
Celid's image vanished, replaced by the pause symbol.
You think Sabaoth did something to Covell?
Pelion asked quietly.
I see no other likely explanation, Thrawn said. My guess is that our beloved Jedi Master was trying to take over Covell's mind, perhaps even replacing entire sections of it with his own. When they hit the Islamir bubble and he lost that direct contact, there wasn't enough of Covell left to keep him alive for long.
I see.
Pelion turned his head away from the Grand Admiral, a darkening anger flowing through him. He'd warned Thrawn about what Sabaoth might do, had warned him over and over again.
What are you going to do about it?
The pause symbol vanished before Thrawn could answer, but it wasn't the standard quarter-size figure that replaced it. Instead, a huge image of Sabaoth's face suddenly glared out at them, jolting Pelion an involuntary step backwards. Thrawn didn't even twitch.
Good morning, Master Sabaoth, the Grand Admiral said, his voice mirror smooth. I see you've discovered the Emperor's private hologram setting.
Grand Admiral Thrawn,
Sabaoth said, his own voice cold and arrogant.
Is this how you reward my work on behalf of your ambitions? By an act of betrayal?
If there is betrayal, it's on your side, Master Sabaoth. What did you do to General Covell?
Sabaoth ignored the question.
The Force is not so easily betrayed as you think. And never forget this, Grand Admiral Thrawn. With my destruction will come your own. I have foreseen it.
He stopped, glaring back and forth at the two of them. For a handful of heartbeats, Thrawn remained silent.
Are you finished?
He asked at last. Sabaoth frowned, the play of uncertainty and nervousness easily visible in the magnified face. For all its intimidating majesty, the Emperor's personal hologram setting clearly had its own set of drawbacks.
For now, have you some feeble defense to offer?
I have nothing to defend, Master Sabaoth. It was you who insisted on going to Wayland. Now tell me what you did to General Covell.
You will restore the Force to me.
The Isla Mare will stay where they are. Tell me what you did to General Covell.
For a moment, the two men glared at each other. Sabaoth's glare crumbled first, and for a moment, it looked as if he was going to fold. But then the old man's jaw jutted out, and once again he was the arrogant Jedi Master.
General Covell was mine to do with as I pleased, as is everything in my empire.
Thank you. That's all I need to know. Colonel Celid?
The huge face vanished and was replaced by Celid's quarter-size image.
Yes, Admiral?
Instructions, Colonel. First of all, Master Sabaoth is hereby placed under arrest. You may allow him free run of the Royal Chambers and Emperor's Throne Room, but he is not to leave there. All control circuits from those floors will be disconnected, of course. Secondly, you're to initiate inquiries as to precisely where General Cavell's troops were seen within the mountain before they left.
Why don't we ask the troops themselves, sir? They presumably have comlinks with them.
Because I'm not certain we could trust their answers. Which brings me to my third order. None of the troops which left the mountain under General Cavell's orders are to be allowed back in. Sealed's jaw dropped visibly.
Sir?
You heard correctly. Another transport will arrive for them in a few days, at which time they'll be rounded up and taken off the planet. But under no circumstances are they to be allowed back into the mountain.
Yes, sir,
Sealed said, floundering.
But, sir, what do I tell them?
You may tell them the truth. That their orders came not from General Cavell, and certainly not from me, but from a traitor to the Empire. Until intelligence can sort through the details, the entire company will be considered as under suspicion, as unwitting accomplices to treason. The word seemed to hang before them in the air.
Understood, sir,
Sealed said at last.
Good, Thrawn said. You are, of course, reinstated as garrison commander. Any questions?
Sealed drew himself up.
No, sir.
Good. Carry on, Colonel. Chimera out.
The figure vanished from the hologram pod.
Do you think it's safe to leave Sabaoth there, sir?
Pelion asked.
There's nowhere in the Empire safer,
Thrawn pointed out.
At least not yet.
Pelion frowned.
I don't understand. His use to the Empire is rapidly nearing an end, Captain,
Thrawn said, turning and walking beneath the archway into the main section of the bridge.
However, he still has one last role to play in our long-term consolidation of power.
He paused at the aft edge of the command walkway.
Sabaoth is insane, Captain. That we both agree on. But such insanity is in his mind, not in his body.
Pelion stared at him.
Are you suggesting we clone him?
Why not? Thrawn asked.
Not at Mount Tantis itself, certainly, given the conditions there. Most likely not at the speed which that facility allows, either. That's all well and good for techs and TIE fighter pilots, but not a project of this delicacy. No. I envision bringing such a clone to childhood, and then allowing it to grow to maturity at a normal pace for its last 10 or 15 years. Under suitable upbringing conditions, of course. I see,
Pelion said, struggling to keep his voice steady. A young Sabaoth, or maybe 2 or 10 or 20 of them, running loose around the galaxy. This was an idea that was going to take some getting used to.
Where would you set up this other cloning facility? Somewhere absolutely secure,
Thrawn said.
Possibly on one of the worlds of the unknown regions, where I once served the Emperor. You'll instruct intelligence to begin searching for a suitable location after we've crushed the rebels at Bilbringi.
Pelion felt his lip twitch. Right. The dangerously ethereal Bilbringi attack. What with this Sabaoth thing, he'd almost forgotten the main business of the day. Or his reservations concerning it.
Yes, sir. Admiral, I'm forced to remind you that all the evidence still indicates Tangreen is the probable point of attack. I'm aware of the evidence, Captain,
Thrawn said.
Nevertheless, they will be at Bilbringi.
He sent his gaze leisurely around his bridge, his glowing red eyes missing nothing. And the crewers knew it. At every station, from the crew pits to the lateral consoles, there were the subtle sounds and movements of men aware that their commander was watching and striving to show him their best.
And so will we,
the Grand Admiral added to Pelion.
Set course for Bilbringi, Captain. And let us prepare to meet our guests.
Wedge drained the last of his cup and set it back on the chipped and stained wood of the small table, glancing across the noisy Mumbry store of cantina as he did so. The place was as crowded as it had been when he, Jansen, and Hobie had come an hour earlier, but the texture of the crowd had changed quite a bit. Most of the younger people had left, couples and groups both, and had been replaced by an older and decidedly seedier-looking bunch. The fringe types were drifting in, which meant it was time for them to be drifting out. His fellow Rogue Squadron pilots knew it, too.
"Time to go?" Hobie suggested, his voice just audible over the noise.
"Right,"
Wedge nodded, getting to his feet and fumbling in his pouch for a coin that would cover his last round. His civilian pouch, and he really hated the awkward things. But it would hardly do for them to go wandering around town in full New Republic uniforms, complete with the distinctive Rogue Squadron patches. He found a proper-sized coin and dropped it into the center of the table as the others stood up.
"Where to now?"
Jansen asked, hunching his shoulders slightly to stretch out his back muscles.
"Back to the base, I think,"
Wedge told him.
"Good,"
Jansen grunted.
"Morning's going to come early enough as it is."
Wedge nodded as he turned and headed toward the exit.
Morning could come any time it wanted to, of course. Well, before then, they were going to be off this planet and driving hard toward their assigned rendezvous point outside the Bilbringi shipyards.
They wove their way between the crowded tables, and as they did so, a tall, thin man shoved his chair back almost into Wedge's knees and got unsteadily to his feet.
"Wash out,"
he slurred, half turning to throw his arm across Wedge's shoulders and much of his weight against Wedge's side.
"Easy, friend,"
Wedge grunted, struggling to regain his balance. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Jansen step to the tall man's other side and put a supporting arm around him.
"Easy sounds good to me,"
the man murmured, the slurring abruptly gone as his arm tightened around Wedge's shoulders.
"All four of us. Nice and easy now. Let's help the poor old drunk out of here."
Wedge stiffened, tracked, blindsided, and caught. And in the flip of an X-Wing, they had suddenly gone from a simple night on the town to serious trouble. With him and Jansen tangled up like this, only Hobie was left with a clear gun hand. And their assailant surely hadn't forgotten to have some backup around. The tall man must have felt Wedge's tension.
"Hey, play it smooth,"
he admonished quietly.
"Don't remember me, huh?"
Wedge frowned at the face practically leaning against his. It didn't look familiar, but on the other hand, at this range, he probably wouldn't recognize his own mother.
"Should I?"
he murmured back. The other did a little more staggering.
"I'd have thought so,"
he said in an injured voice.
"You go up against a Star Destroyer with someone, he ought to remember you. Especially out in the middle of nowhere."
Wedge frowned a little harder at the face, dimly aware that the whole group had started walking.
In the middle of nowhere?
And suddenly, it hit him. The Katana fleet. And Talancard's people coming out of nowhere to lend their assistance and firepower against the Imperials. And afterwards, the brief preoccupied introductions aboard the Star Cruiser.
"Aves? That wasn't so hard, was it?"
the other said approvingly.
"Told you could do it if you tried. Come on now. Nice and easy, and don't let's draw any more attention to ourselves than we need to."
There didn't seem to be any real option other than to comply. But even as Wedge continued toward the exit, he kept his eyes moving, looking for something they could use to get them out of this. Card and his people had supposedly agreed to funnel information back to the New Republic, but that was a far way from being allies together. And if the Empire had threatened them, or just bought them outright... But no opportunity for escape presented itself before they got out the doors.
"This way,"
Abe said, abandoning his drunk act and hurrying down the dimly lit and sparsely populated street. Jansen caught Wedge's eye and raised his eyebrows questioningly. Wedge shrugged slightly in return and set off after Abe's. It could still be some sort of trap, but at this point the vague fears were being rapidly overtaken by simple curiosity. Something was going on, and he wanted to find out what. He didn't have long to wonder about it.
Two buildings down from the Mumbry Storv, Aves turned and disappeared into a darkened entryway. Wedge followed, half expecting to run into half a dozen blaster muzzles, but Aves was alone.
"What now?"
he asked, as Jansen and Hobie joined them. Aves nodded toward the street outside the entryway.
"Watch," he said. "If I'm right, here he comes."
Wedge looked. A walrus-faced aqualish strode quickly by, throwing a quick glance into the entryway as he passed. His stride broke just noticeably, then he caught himself and picked up his pace. He passed the other side of the entryway. There was a muffled thud, and suddenly the aqualish was back in the entryway, his slack and obviously unconscious form being supported by two grim-faced men.
"Any trouble?" Aves asked.
"Nah,"
one of the men said, as they dropped the aqualish none too gently to the ground near the back of the entryway.
"They're a lot meaner than they are smart."
"This one was smart enough," Abe said. "Take a good look at him, Antilles. Maybe next time you'll recognize an Imperial spy when you pick one up."
Wedge looked down at the alien.
"An Imperial spy, huh? A freelancer, anyway."
Abe shrugged.
"Just as dangerous."
Wedge looked back at him, trying to keep his expression neutral.
"I suppose we ought to thank you,"
he said. One of the other men, busy searching the aqualicious clothing, snorted under his breath.
"I think you should, yeah," Abe said. "If it hadn't been for us, you'd have been a juicy little item in the next Imperial Intelligence report."
"I suppose we would have,"
Wedge conceded, exchanging glances with Hobie and Jansen. But then that had been the idea of the whole charade, to do their bit to convince Grand Admiral Thrawn that Tangreen was still the New Republic's intended target.
"What are you going to do with him?"
he asked Aves.
"We'll take care of him," Abe said. "Don't worry, he won't be making any reports anytime soon."
Wedge nodded. One evening shot completely to flinders. Still, it was nice to know Card's people were still on their side.
"Thanks again,"
he said, and meant it this time.
"I owe you one."
Aves cocked his head.
"You want to pay off that debt right now?"
"How?" Wedge asked cautiously.
"We've got a little job in the works,"
Aves said, waving a hand vaguely toward the night sky.
"We know you do, too. It would help a lot if we could time ours to go while you're keeping Thrawn occupied."
Wedge frowned at him.
"What? You want me to tell you when our operation is starting?" "Why not?"
Aves said reasonably.
"Like I said, we already know it's in the works. Bel Iblis's repeat performance and all that."
Wedge looked at his pilots again, wondering if they appreciated the irony of this as much as he did. Here they stood, an evening's worth of subtle hints gone straight down the proton tubes, and now they were being asked for an outright confirmation of the whole operation. Colonel Derlin's decoy team couldn't have set things up better if they'd tried.
"I'm sorry,"
he said slowly, putting some genuine regret into his voice.
"But you know I can't tell you that."
"Why not?"
Aves asked patiently.
"Like I said, we already know most of it already. I can prove that if you want."
"Not here," Wedge said quickly. The goal was to plant hints, not to be so obvious that it aroused suspicion.
"Someone might hear you."
Jansen tapped his arm.
"Sir, we need to get back,"
he murmured.
"There's a lot of work yet to do before we leave."
I know,
Wedge said.
Good old Jansen.
Just the angle he'd been searching for.
"Look, Aves, I'll tell you what I'll do. Are you going to stick around here for a while?"
"I could. Why?"
"Let me talk to my unit commander,"
Wedge said.
"See if I can get a special clearance for you."
Aves' expression showed pretty clearly what he thought of that idea.
"It's worth a try," he said diplomatically instead.
"How soon can you get an answer?"
"I don't know,"
Wedge said.
"He's as busy as all the rest of us, you know. I'll try to get back to you one way or the other, but if you haven't heard from me in about 28 hours, don't expect to."
Aves might have smiled slightly. Wedge couldn't tell in the dim light.
"All right,"
he said, grumbling a bit.
I suppose it's better than nothing. You can leave any messages with the night bartender at the Dona Laza Tap Caf.
Okay, Wedge said. We've got to go.
Thanks again.
Together, he and the other two pilots left the entryway and crossed the street. They were two blocks away before Hobie spoke.
28 hours, huh? Pretty clever.
I thought so.
Wedge agreed modestly.
Leaving here then would get us to Tan Green just about on time for the big battle.
Let's just hope he's planning to sell that information to the Empire, Jansen murmured. It'd be a shame to have wasted the whole evening.
Oh, he'll sell it all right, Hobie snorted. He's a smuggler. What else would he want it for?
Wedge thought back to the katana battle. Maybe that was indeed all Card and his gang were. Fringe scum, always for sale to the highest bidder. But somehow, he didn't think so.
We'll find out soon enough, he told Hobie. Come on. Like Jansen said, we've got a lot of work to do.